Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. It's Monday, May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Hope everybody's been having a good time out there celebrating and having plenty of margaritas, but please drive safe when you're done. Tonight we're going to wrap up the weekend at Talladega between the Nationwide Series and the Sprint Cup Series. First, let me bring to the air my very special guest, NASCAR legend, Swervin' Ernie Irvin. Welcome to the show, Ernie.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. As a guy who enjoyed watching you race back in the day and seeing what's going on in the sport today, it's like we long for the days of yesteryear when the racing was a little bit more fun and exciting. Of course, this weekend at Talladega is one of the more exciting races in the series, along with Daytona with the restrictor plates. Do you miss not being on the track for a while?
Yeah, I mean, I think the racing has been exceptional. It's been all year. It's been exciting. I think what NASCAR has done with their point system and all that has just made it. You know, I mean, every driver's going out there to win the race, and we're not going out chasing points. And, I mean, I think it's been exciting, and I think the fans have really thought it was exciting, too.
Yeah, I think this year has been one of the better years around. Of course, back in when you were driving, they didn't have the chase. It was an all-out points battle from the Daytona 500 all the way to the final race, I think it was Atlanta back in the day. Or did you were you still there when they went to Homestead?
No, I never went to Homestead. No.
And I got a good chance of winning what was then called the Winston Cup until that nasty accident in Michigan. Because you and Dale Earnhardt were in probably one of the tough season-long battles because you were in 28 Robert Yates Ford, which was probably the best competition that Earnhardt's Goodwin Chevy at the time.
Well, I mean, at the time, I mean, I think we had a lot going for us. And, you know, I mean, Ford Motor Company really wanted somebody, since they lost Davey, they wanted somebody there to challenge Earnhardt every week. So I feel very fortunate to have Robert Yates' Ford, Texaco Abilene Ford, so. I mean, it's exciting.
It was a good time to watch. But now they have all the safety features that probably back then, had they been in place, you might still be driving or just recently retired. Like the safer
well,
barrier.
You know, the thing is, but the thing is, Dale Earnhardt would probably still be alive if we had all those safety features. And, you know, Bobby Allison probably wouldn't have got hurt like he got hurt. And, you know, Clifford Allison probably wouldn't have lost his life up in Michigan. So there is so many things that they've done to make the racing safer. And, you know, it costs a lot of people a lot of things as far as, you know, getting hurt and things like that. But you never know what safety features you're missing until you're actually starting to have injuries and things like that. So, you know, I mean, you know, 20 years ago, nobody would have ever thought about a head and neck restraint. And, you know, nowadays, you wouldn't even get in a race car without a head and neck restraint.
Now they have the full-face helmets instead of the open face with the goggles. I think between the safer barrier and the head and neck restraints, also the redesign of the cars has made it a whole lot better, too.
I mean, there's no doubt that NASCAR has done their best to try to, you know, save teams money. But then again, sometimes you're your own worst enemy if you decide you don't want to do it that way because, you know, it's cheaper. But, you know, right now all the teams are, you know, abiding to what NASCAR wants as far as the safety features. And the safety features are, you know, second to none. NASCAR's done a great job with that. And they enforce the rules. You know, very forcefully and making sure that everybody is buying to the same type of rules.
And they're always going to catch somebody trying to do what they call work in the gray areas. And for some reason, whether it's not definitely in the rules, NASCAR usually rules against them anyway, and then it's a rule change the next season.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what makes the world go around. You know, everybody's looking at an advantage. And, you know, sometimes you can call it an unfair advantage, but sometimes, you know, if you're deliberately cheating, if you know what you're doing is deliberate, no matter what, is illegal, you just don't want to get caught, well, shame on you. And, you know, if it just so happens that, you know, there's some discrepancy on the rules and, you know, what you're doing is basically it's a different reading of the rules. So it's tough to understand, you know, how they base the rule and making sure that they're making it where somebody can't reinterpret it.
And that's about all they can do, and that, you know, something they keep on top on, and it's a credit to that to them how they can keep an eye on things, and they've done it over the years. With respect to, I guess, the racing this year, with all the developments to this new Generation 6 car that when they first came out with the new style for safety, they kind of took it out of the driver's hands, and now they're making it to where they could put it more back into the driver's hands. And you think it makes more of a competitive field out there?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it, you know, I mean, it's always going to be where the big teams have got the better stuff, you know, and because of money. But now there's so many big teams that are affiliated with the other teams, and they're basically, you know, this whole group, say, 5 to 7 guys are actually working together. So it's made a lot of the smaller teams basically can act like a bigger team.
And now you got the single car teams that were around 20 years ago. Now they're always tied in with something, whether it's they're buying Childress Motors or Hendrick Motors or Ford's make Roush Yates and you know making all the Ford motors, so nobody can really do their own thing. And I don't know if it's helping to keep the cost down, because that was one of the things that. The main issues that NASCAR had was the rising cost of everything, and I don't know what it cost to fund for Texaco to put their name on your 28 car 20 years ago, but it's what now if they had to do it would be like $10 to $15 million a season.
Yeah, it's definitely changed, and you know, I mean, I think NASCAR is trying to do a good job to make it where it's not as expensive as it could be, because they're, you know, governing, you know, what the people can do. They're working on motor situations to try to get it where, you know, there's kind of a limitation on what you can do to the motor. And, you know, every time there's a reaction, action and a reaction. And that's what happens is you have such smart people always trying to get the advantage to win races. If it didn't pay more to win, and if it didn't really do anything for your sponsor in, you know, people probably wouldn't be this hard on winning. And, you know, I mean, again, because of the exposure, sponsors, you know, obviously you get a lot more exposure winning the race than you do for running 20th. So that's what it's all about. And, you know, I mean, this is a sponsor-driven sport. No way around it.
Back in the day when before the big dollars came in, it was pretty much a fan-driven sport. And then they started growing and growing from maybe 40, 50,000 people to a race. Now you have places like Bristol and Dover, and some of the bigger tracks with well over 150,000 seats. So they at least were, you know, packing them in for a while until the economy went a little sour and a lot of people couldn't afford to go. But I think that's all coming back, and which is good for the sport. When you heard about years ago when they, you know, went from the regular old beginning in to the end of the season championship to the chase format, did you think that was going to be a positive or a negative?
I mean, when I first heard about it, I thought they were crazy. But now when you start really, really dissecting it, I mean, I think it's one of the things that have made the sport keep growing. And I mean, I think a lot of it is because of football, baseball. They all have kind of the same situation, you know, elimination. So, I mean, I think that, what they've done is try to copy football or baseball, but in their own way. And, I mean, it's just made it exciting. I mean, I wish I was racing and had them opportunities to race like that. So, you know, and then, you know, the one thing I really like is drivers have at it. I like that part of it.
Well, I think it was pretty much an unwritten rule back in the day for drivers having at it. It's just, I think back then they knew when to pick their spots, and now it seems like they're having at it like after the race, or, you know, they're not being patient until the next short track race when they can have at it and get away with it. Now you got the brawls after the race. We kind of had that after Bristol, too, but due to tempers flaring. But it seems like everybody's wrecking the cars after the race instead of just waiting until doing it in the competition. And it's costing, you know, some teams more money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously there's emotion there. It is so important to win the race now. Right now there's nothing but winning. If you can win, that sets your year to get to the next level. And if you don't and you end up in a season without winning, I mean, you know, your season's somewhat over. And so it's basically it's really, really hard to go out there and just have to try to win. And, you know, some teams just don't have the capabilities of going and winning a race except for like a Talladega deal. And, you know, sometimes somebody may hit on something and win a race or different pit stop, and it just so happens that they are in the right position at the right time.
That's another thing. I think with this year's emphasis on winning, we have, what, eight different winners and two repeat winners, where I think at this point you would have more repeat winners, so more people are fighting to get in because they're taking 16 people to the chase. And I don't know, they redesigned that now. We're going to have elimination, so if you're at the bottom of, I guess, the leaders in the chase, the bottom three get dropped off after, I guess, a couple of races, and then...
Yeah, after two or three, yeah.
And then it cuts down, so that should make it even more interesting. Of course.
It's going to be exciting to the day that we go to Homestead, and the only four guys that are really racing for the championship are those four guys. So, you know, everybody's racing for the win, but at the time, I mean, can you imagine end of the whole season? If you're in the top four, you go out and, you know, win the race, you won the championship. If you go out and run 20th, you can still win the championship because, you know, basically, if you outrun the three other guys that are competing for the championship. So, I mean, I think it's really exciting. I mean, I'm excited to be able to watch it.
I'm looking forward to seeing it this year, too. I know when they brought about the original chase, and they reset everything and took the top 10 guys, and then they added a couple a little later on, you know, a couple years ago. It seemed to work. I don't know if it would have turned out this way had there not been a chase with Jimmy Johnson winning six championships and five in a row. I mean, that sounded pretty unheard of, but lo and behold, there he is, and he surpassed Jeff Gordon, who basically was the next guy in line to look to tie Earnhardt and Petty. So it's kind of weird how things work out sometimes.
Well, you know, the thing is everybody at the start of the season knew the rules and knew the criteria that you had to do to win the championship. And you can't get any better than a 48 car to take advantage of every rule to, you know, better help themselves. And, you know, I mean, Jimmy Johnson is a great race car driver. And, you know, I mean, I don't even know if I can carry his helmet bag. So he's just an unbelievable race car driver.
There he is. And the thing about it is, you know, certain guys make it look easy, and it seems like when he was winning his championships were easy. Some people make it seem like it was a little harder to do, but I guess when you have the chemistry of a crew chief that you've been with for a while and your pretty much team buys into that, like kind of like Earnhardt back in the day with his crew chiefs, and then you had Gordon with Everingham, and it seemed the cohesion factor, I think, seems to benefit in the long run than people that seem to change crew chiefs every other year.
You know, I mean, obviously, the crew chief and the car owner and the driver have got to mesh. And, you know, I mean, I know when I went from the Kodak car to the 28 car, I mean, me and Larry didn't take much, you know, very long to mesh. I mean, I think I won my third race out. So, it's, you know, if you have a good race team and you've got an open mind and you've got a great race car and a good crew chief and a good driver, you can win races instantly. So, I mean, it hasn't changed, but, you know, the competition has got tighter and it got tougher.
That's for sure, and it seems like there's more drivers out there that can win a championship, let alone races, than there were back in the day, because you figure that the Hendrick bunch, the Gibbs bunch, the Roush bunch, there's half the field pretty much right there, the Childress bunch, and everybody's competing.
Well, then you also have the affiliations with all those guys, you know. And then you have Chase Elliott coming up, and then you also have all these up and coming drivers. I mean, it's unbelievable what the talent they've got, and they're able to just get in a really good ride, and they're able to perform. And you know, I mean, Ryan Blaney. I mean, we've done a lot of stuff with Ryan Blaney, and he's got a lot of talent. And you know, I mean, you know, he just hasn't got right in. I mean, he's actually done a really good job, but they've kind of been working him up. So, I mean, I think he's going to be, you know, in the next couple of years, he's going to be another guy that's going to be chasing for a championship. And Kyle Larson, I mean, it's an unbelievable amount of racing he can do, and he's going to be right there, and Chase Elliott's going to be right there. And, you know, that's what we're doing is we're trying to, you know, prime my son to – hopefully be able to get in a position to be able to take a ride like that.
And that's how the sport keeps on going. When Ganassi brought up Kyle Larson to the Cup Series this year, I kind of thought, well, it might be a little premature for him because, you know, he was in the Nationwide Series just 1 year. I figured he would have kept him down there a little bit to grow. But he seems to be running pretty good. He adapts well. And Chase Elliott went in two straight races, almost the third, Darlington of all places. You know, he's a chip off the old block. I kind of think the funny part of that situation is one of Dale Earnhardt's biggest competitors was Bill Elliott, and now his son Chase is driving for Dale Jr. You know, it's kind of funny how that meshes together, and it's like kind of the irony of it all. And, you know, when two guys are doing battle each week head-to-head, and you got fans of one and fans in the other, with creating this intense rivalry, and then a generation later, one's driving for one son's driving for the other son, and and it seems to be working out well. He's even got the old number.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's great that Chase has been able to get in there, and I mean, you know, obviously the bloodline is there, and you know, Bill was an awesome race car driver, and you know, Chase, you know, obviously he's apparently been trimmed and polished exactly like Bill has.
Well, that's good to see. Now, coming up in a little bit, we're going to let you go and bring in your son, Jared. How's he progressing? And, you know, of course, I guess he decided to follow in your footsteps and take up the racing biz as well. How hard is it to see your son, you know, get in a car and try to apply his trade to make it up to the top levels of the sport?
I mean, obviously it's really hard as far as, you know, the expense and things like that. I mean, I think that Jared, what we're doing is trying to get him more experience. I mean, he's only ran a Super Late model like maybe 15 times, and it's just you can't buy experience. The only way you can buy experience is going out there and doing it. I feel like he's doing a good job. If it wasn't for partners like Armist, the number one misting fan system, if it wasn't for people like that, then we wouldn't be able to race. And so I'm really pleased that, you know, they've come aboard and been able to, you know, help us be able to groom Jared to, you know, someday, you know, get into the nationwide truck, hopefully in the Cup Series, and, you know, hopefully they can go right along with us.
How old is Jared right now?
He is 16, just turned 16.
Oh, he's got a few, he's got some growing time yet.
Yeah, I mean, but you know how it is. It's like everybody's, if you're 20 years old and you haven't run a Cup race, then you might be in trouble.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, he's just coming. He hasn't run the late model series that much, so he gets some seat time there. And
yep.
The good thing is, living in the Charlotte area, all the teams are down that way. So a lot of times these guys probably come out if there's a weekend off for the team owners and see what kind of talent's out there, and they go from there. So you get to get them in development with the K&N and work their way through.
Well, there's no doubt that there's. You know, a lot of it is there's a lot of talk. You know, when you start hearing about somebody that, you know, whether it's a, you know, a Casey Elliott or whether it's a, you know, whoever, Ryan Blaney, I mean, it's just next thing you know, it's like, you know, Roger Penske hears about Ryan, and then next thing you know, you see him go out and run really good. It's like, huh, you know, I'd like to get a hold of this kid before somebody else does, and there's teams like that that can do that, and Chip Ganassi, I mean, it's, you know, he got Kyle Larson before Kyle Larson had really done a lot, and so all those things, and hopefully, I mean, when it's all said and done, I would love somebody to, you know, pick my son up and, you know, hopefully be able to take him, you know, a lot further than I can take them. And, but when it's all said and done, you have to produce. You go out there and win races and do good for a sponsor and, you know, do all those things, then you're going to be able to make a living driving a race car.
And like I said, that has a lot to do with it all. And a lot of it comes down to money and being able to put a competitive vehicle out on the track every week. Well, Ernie, I'd like to thank you for coming on. I hope you had a good time. I hope you join us again, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, reminiscing about some good old days and some new days coming up.
Well, it's always exciting to talk about racing, and, I don't get to talk much about it because, you know, just obviously we're here, and we're not in the racing series now, so I just get to watch it and talk about it a little bit and think about what I could have done.
Well, you're always welcome to come on and throw your two cents in. So,
okay. Okay, well, I appreciate it.
Hey, you take care, and I guess we'll be in touch. I might want to pick your brain down the road a little piece, especially maybe around chase time.
No problem.
We can see, make some picks and things.
No problem. I'll be right here.
All right. You have a good one. Pleasure talking to you now.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. There you have it. Ernie Irvin joining us on the air soon. Coming up in a few minutes will be none other than Jared Irvin, his 16-year-old son, who's climbing the ladder, following in Daddy's footsteps. As far as the weekend goes, on a strange Saturday afternoon, where the pole sitter was Sam Hornish Jr., his first time in a nationwide car since leaving Team Penske, had the number one spot, starting spot. And the nationwide race back down the pack driving instead of the two-car tandem, which made it for an interesting race. Of course, you had your few crashes. There was only 7 for 29 laps in the 117-lap event, the Aaron's 312. And it was good to see a bunch of Nationwide Series drivers in the field taking home the top spot, of course. And with Elliott Sadler getting his first win since switching over to Joe Gibbs Racing, it puts him tighter and tightens up the field for the championship. Chris Buescher wound up being second in the 60 Roush Performance Ford. Reagan Smith was third. David Reagan, who had won last year's Cup race at Talladega, was fourth. And the pole sitter, Sam Hornish Jr., came home with driving the 54 car, normally driven by one Kyle Busch. So he did wind up himself a top five finish after coming oh so close in the championship last year. So it was different to see what he was going to do this year. Of course, this year he's only scheduled to run 7 races. So he's not going to be in a car all that much, and he filled in for Denny Hamlin when Hamlin had his eye problem a few weeks back. So Sam's a good guy. He's been on the show a bit last year, and we wish him well. Rounding out the top 10 was Joe Nemechek, front row Joe, in 6th, J.J. Yelley in 7th. 8th was Landon Castle. 9th was David Starr, and rounding out the top 10 was Trevor Bayne. There were only 7 cautions for 29 laps. Like I said before, there were 27 lead changes amongst 13 drivers, so it was a fairly competitive race there, because you figure who can get to the front and the back and all that. Right now, as the point standing still is, Chase Elliott still leads the standings, but he's just down to a one-point lead over Elliott Sadler. And 3 points above teammate Reagan Smith. So right there's your top 3 spots in the Nationwide Series and how far they are apart. So it's going to be a tough race. And this weekend we're going to Kansas, and I think all 3 series are in action there. And we'll be right. So we're going to take a little break and be right back after these words.
Cadence Candle is a family-owned company that makes the finest quality hand-poured candles you'll find anywhere, in many different colors, sizes, and scents. They use only the best wax and scents to ensure your candle performs to its very best, each and every time. Cadence uses a unique blend of hybrid wax that consists of a 50% soy and a 50% paraffin mixture, enabling the best of both worlds in candle making. The soy base is to ensure a cleaner burn while being environmentally friendly, and the paraffin is used to achieve a great scent throw and the ability to add color nicely, giving those bright, vibrant colors that catch your eyes. Cadence Candles carries a wide variety of gel candles as well. Need a fundraiser for your school or church? Candles make a great item to use for fundraisers for any type of function you may have. Give Cadence Candles a call at 610-960-5677 or find them on the web at www.cadencecandles.com. And for all you Facebook users, be sure to like them at Facebook at facebook.com/Cadence Candle.
And we're back here on Garage Talk Live. I'd like to bring to the show my next very special guest, son of my previous guest, Jared Irvin. Jared, welcome to Garage Talk Live. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's a pleasure being with you.
And so you decided to follow your dad's footsteps and go into racing.
Yep, I started doing it when I was 4.5 years old and just kind of move up through the ranks, and it's a lot of fun doing it, so, I mean, it's what I'd like to do.
4.5 years old, I guess you were in a go-kart, but I didn't even know how to work your feet when you're that young.
I didn't really think much then. I was just going out there and having fun, really, and it kind of turned into just something I'd rather do for the kind of rest of my life.
Wow. So, because then, I guess when you're that young, you only worry about the gas pedal and following what's behind you until you start passing everybody, and it doesn't have to chase you. And it's hard to believe you've been doing this 12 years already because you're only 16 and. So what divisions have you gone through to get to this point, besides the go-karts?
Well, first I started in quarter midgets out at the local track, and then I moved up to the Ford Focus midgets, which now the HPD midgets, they went to a Honda. So we went through that and then kind of moved to a legend car, and then now this year we're running, well, a little bit of last year I ran the past series with the super late model, and then this year I run the full season with Oramus as my sponsor, so it's a good season, and so far we've finished pretty good, and hopefully we're going to get better as the season goes on.
Well, you know, this year you're running the late models, are you sticking with asphalt, or are you doing dirt as well?
We're just sticking with the asphalt super late model with the past series.
No. What tracks do you get to race on, or you just get to race on the same track every week?
Oh, it's a touring series all over the Southeast. We go to tracks like South Austin. We went to Hickory earlier this year. We went to Orange County, Greenville Pickens. We go to Franklin County. We go to a lot of places out here in the Southeast, and it's a good series and had a lot of variety of tracks.
As a Franklin County, down here in southwestern Virginia, kind of where I'm based out of right now. I used to be a northern boy and moved south to get into the fresh air a little bit. So I got that. South Boston's a little further away. About Motor Mile, you do hit the Motor Mile Speedway as well?
No, not this year. They don't have that on the schedule. But I hear it's a fun track to be at.
Yeah, that's probably the closest one to where I'm at. As far as NASCAR's major tracks, I'm like 90 miles north of Bristol. That's probably the closest one. And then 3 hours from Charlotte and Martinsville is a little bit further east of me. So it's in a pretty good spot. So I was just wondering if you hit some of the tracks in the area there. But Franklin County is a nice little third-mile track. It seems to looks like a lot of fun from what I've seen.
Yeah, I haven't been there yet this year, or I haven't been there ever before, so it should be a learning experience going there.
the super late models are running V8s and all, pretty much.
Yeah, we run a V8, and really most of the tracks you restrict the engine just to keep the tires underneath it, because we go 150 laps with the same set of tires, and there's a lot of tire fall off, so we restrict the engines to try and keep the tires from getting too worn out before the end of the race.
They don't want you to have to spend a lot of money on tires. Tires are going to be pretty expensive, especially racing tires. And you know, at that level, you know, it's good to have a few sponsors to help you out, but it's not like racing in Nationwide Truck Series or Sprint Cup Series where it costs you millions of dollars to keep the thing on the track. So, it seems like you're having fun and a good time there. And is this going to run the whole season or try to at least?
Yeah, we're running the full season with Oramus. They're giving us a great sponsorship for this year. And we'll run the full season with the Pass South Series and then 10 races at Summer Shootout at Charlotte Motor Speedway with the Legend Cars.
Ah, that's going from a lot of room to no room at all, isn't it? Stepping back down to the Legends cars. If you were younger, you know, you'd be a little smaller fit in the car, but then when you start growing, that extra space feels good.
Yeah, I only weigh about 100 pounds, so to worry about all the space, the Legend car is pretty much plenty of room for me, and the late model is just kind of like driving in luxury.
Like driving a big Lincoln or something, right? But how are you adjusting to the difference? Going back and forth, do you find it difficult to adjust to the power and the acceleration of one to the other?
I mean, really, the power-to-weight ratio in a Legend car is kind of close to a super late model, because the Legend car has really small tires, and they're treaded, so they don't have a whole lot of grip. And that kind of helps with keeping the same kind of, like, feel as far as throttle goes.
Gotcha. And yet on the highway, the more tread, the better. On the racetrack, the less tread, the better.
Yep, that's exactly how it is.
So, sounds like you have a pretty exciting season ahead of you. Which places you have circled on your calendar that you're going to want to enjoy going to the most?
What was that?
What tracks do you have that you want to go to? Like, say, I really want to race that one as opposed to this one, or you know, what are some of the tracks you're eyeing up as one of the more exciting ones you want to be at?
This Friday night at Ace Speedway. That's one of my favorite tracks because with the USAC midgets, we ran there pretty much every week, and I won there a lot, so I'm hoping I can do the same in the super late model. And then later on the year, South Boston, we finished second there last year, so that should be a fun track.
Yeah, sounds pretty good. Now, what are you running for late model, Ford, Chevy?
Chevy.
Running a Chevy? That seemed to be the easiest thing to get parts for, or do you just like the way they run?
I mean, really, with the super late model, you don't really have any parts that are like Chevy or Ford parts. So everything's made by, like, our chassis made by Hampe Race Cars, and pretty much all the parts are made by Hampe. So the motor is made by a motor builder out of Alabama, and really, the only Chevy part about it is kind of the stickers on the front end. That's the most way you can tell the difference.
Oh, I thought maybe they use, like, the Chevy blocks for the Chevy cars and the Ford blocks for the, you know, the Ford motors for the Ford cars, and it's just a matter of how they build them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little difference there, but they're pretty much all the parts are readily available for any series or any Chevy or Ford.
So do you get to pick the car, or is it something you? I guess your dad, your team owner.
Yep, my dad is a team owner and car chief, and he does pretty much as much work as he can at the shop, and he's a big part of our team. Couldn't do it without him.
So did he pick your car for you, or did you have some input in what you were going to drive?
I kind of like the Chevy front end compared to the Ford, but that was what, when we bought the car, was the Chevy, so that kind of steered us in that direction.
Gotcha. I was wondering which Chevy model they use versus the, which Ford model they use in the Super Late models.
They use the Chevy SS for the Chevy, and then for the Ford, they use the Ford Fusion.
Okay, so they're going that route. It's not like we got the Mustang front end or stickers and versus the Camaro stickers like in the Nationwide series.
Yep, they kind of keep it more simple in the past series.
Well, sounds like it's going to be an interesting year for you. And how do you mix, you know, how do you race and go to school at the same time during the year? I know once school year's over, but, you know, it's not a problem, but the last few months of the year, how do you manage that?
I mean, it's hard, but you just got to do it. You just got to put in the work, go to the shop, and then go home and do all the homework. And usually the homework load's not too bad, so that helps out.
That's always a good thing. And then if you can finish it while you're in school, like if you get a couple study halls, you do it then, right?
Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, sounds like you got an exciting year ahead of you, and we'll keep an eye out for you. Maybe get in contact with your mom, and when you come up to Franklin County, or if you run somewhere around here, maybe take a ride down and catch a short track race and see you run.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Past series has had some really good racing this year, and they've had close races come down to the line every race.
That's cool. At least nobody's running away with it. I always like an exciting finish. So, wish you a lot of luck, and thank you for coming on the air with us. And I hope you bring home a few trophies, if not a championship this year.
Yep, that's the goal, and thanks for having me on.
Okay, have a good one now.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. There you have it, Jared Irvin. Ernie Irvin's 16-year-old son started riding at 4.5. Now, that's awfully young. But, hey, if you got the means and the ways to do it, if I had that, I probably would have started driving at that age myself. But good to have the Ernie and Jared on. Have a first generation and second generation. Hopefully he gets the same look and moves up into the NASCAR National Series. It's kind of interesting. You have the Earnhardts, you have the Elliotts, and you get the Irvins back up in there. It's like, who's next? Whose kid's next? Just have to wait and see. I guess you have to wait for this generation of drivers for their kids to grow up. So I think for sure, though, I know Kelly Earnhardt's daughter is making her way through the ranks, and as long as there's equipment to be had at daddy's, mommy's, and uncle's, she might be the next one in. But back to the action that was Talladega yesterday. It turned out to be a pretty decent race where there was a lot of cruising, a lot of different leaders that led for extended periods of time. Seemed like the race was going to run fairly clean for the most part. A lot of the stuff that happened until late in the race where You had 48 lead changes amongst 23 drivers. That's not the record, but it's a good amount, so it was just good to see there. And, of course, some strategies came into play, some late pit stops, two tires, four tires, who was coming in for gas when. Of course, some people came in late, topped off with fuel so they could go the distance in case they had a green-white checker. Then you had Dale Jr., who was running up front and decided to play some strategy move, backing off until late in the race because of the big one hadn't happened yet. A lot of the trouble that happened basically was an earlier incident when Brad Keselowski came down, thought he had room from the middle lane to go low, but Danica Patrick was right there, and he wound up spinning out, taking a few cars, and just one of those racing deals. Everything I saw that happened looked like, you know, it was nobody's fault. He just came down a little. He wasn't clear when he came down, and as fast as they were going, turned sideways. The strange thing that got me was when Keselowski got back on the track, he was six laps down, and he was leading the train going to the front, figuring, I guess, if he can get around the leader, he was able to get a lap back, because Jamie McMurray was down six laps early in whatever caution, being that he was the first car laps down, he was getting laps back, so he almost had a chance to get back on the lead lap. And then Keselowski was leading a train up the middle with Trevor Bain and all that, and he just lost it. That was one big wreck. And then later on, Jimmy Johnson must have had a tire go down, and he spun out and had a big wreck. And not so big, because Keselowski took out a bunch of cars the first couple times. And then Carl Edwards, you could see he had a tire going down because he was waving to get to the inside, and then he broke loose, and a couple cars got wrecked as well. So it kind of made for an interesting finish. Dale Jr., who ran good, backed up just to avoid the late wreckage. Danica Patrick, who ran up front, starting seventh, had a pretty good showing until it looked like she did what Junior did and backed up and hung around towards the back. That hurt their finish. So the lap leader of the race was Greg Biffle, and he only led 58 laps. So that will tell you that it was just one of those things where you had to be in the right place at the right time at the right end of the race. And, of course, the yellow came out with about six laps to go. Let's see when the last yellow was. Lap 184. So when they rethrew the green, they were on lap 186. They only had two laps to go. The finish was going to be green-white checker in regulation, though, instead of overtime. And then as they came back around, as Hamlin was headed towards the white flag, there was another wreck happening in the back. And they had already taken the white flag. There was a chunk of debris right there at the start-finish line. And they were going to let him race back to the green, but they had to throw to yellow because that big chunk of debris was there when they were heading into turn three, so for safety's sake at that point, had that debris cleared, I think they would have let him race all the way back on the green. They didn't want to throw to yellow, but I saw online where a few people were complaining, but Hamlin wound up winning that one. Greg Biffle, one of his better runs of the year was second, Clint Bowyer, third. Brian Vickers, a good run for him, fourth. A.J. Allmendinger, where do you see these names up at the top? finished fifth. Sixth was Paul Menard. Seventh, Kevin Harvick. Eighth was Casey Kane, who had some he got into it a little bit yesterday as well. Ninth was Kyle Larson. Tenth, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., another good run for him. Everybody got banged up in some instances early on. Joey Logano, who led a good bit of the race, wound up in that wreck with his teammate Trevor Bain and on lap 38 there, and of course lap 142 is when everybody last pitted for the most part, except Dale Jr. All of them came on one of the later yellows with the Bree yellow, and then with Hamlin's win, the way the points sit, it's still Jeff Gordon at the top of the heap, with Matt Kenseth right behind him with no wins, and then Kyle Busch third, Dale Jr. fourth, fifth Carl Edwards, sixth Joey Logano. These are all race winners. And then Jimmy Johnson and Biffle in seventh and eighth, and ninth with Newman, tenth with Vickers, all with no wins. This is just straight up how the points go. Brad Keselowski, 12th with Denny Hamlin. They have wins. Hamlin just getting his. Then Kyle Larson, Austin Dillon, A.J. Allmendinger, and Marcus Ambrose. Now, the way the rules say, if you're in the top 30 and you have a win, you move into the chase. So that would move Kevin Harvick, who has two wins, into the chase, and Kurt Busch, who has a win, into the chase. And right now, Harvick's 19th, and Kurt Busch is 27th, so they would move up and make it into the chase. Now, as far as seeding goes, I think Harvick with two wins would probably move at the top of the heap with Joey Logano. But being Joey Logano's already into the top 16, he'd get the top seed over Harvick. But we'll just have to wait to see how that all shakes out. So it's just going to be interesting to see. I'm kind of curious of how we're going to do the chase. And with all these drivers getting wins now, it should be pretty interesting that if we can get 16 different race winners, if somebody doesn't have a point, they're out of the chase. So that's going to be the interesting part of it. Because then they have the chase elimination, so that ought to be pretty interesting. Of course, next week, as we gear up for the final week to vote for your driver in the Sprint Unlimited, Miss Sprint Cup will be rejoining us. Which one, I don't know. I'll know by next week, and then we'll have another up-and-coming driver by the name of I'll get it there. Shayla Waddell, she'll be joining us next week as well at 8:30. So, and then I have a lot of young driver guests coming up in the mix. So we'll be bringing the young drivers and the older drivers as well. So if you want, let's hear from our race winner and this is about his win and how he feels about it.
So, you know, a win like this kind of makes you forget all those things, and it obviously gives you a clean slate for the rest of the summer to start over. So You know, we don't have to hit the panic button at this point. Now we can just focus on working on our program, doing whatever it takes to get ourselves in contention where we're a top five car every week, because that's what it's going to take to win the championship. So this is a good moment for us. It definitely is. Even though it is super speedway and it's all circumstantial, it at least lets us rest a little bit easier here for a while. You know, kind of been preaching and beating up, you know, how we are on all the other racetracks. You know, coming to this racetrack, you know that it's an equalizer and you've got as good a shot as anyone. So you've got to take advantage of these moments and these type of racetracks when you feel like you're a little bit off on the others. And so we were able to do that today, and now it buys us some time to get our program where it needs to be for September when it really counts.
Of course, September is when the begins right after the Richmond race, which is the last race to make the chase. So we'll just have to wait and see how that turns out. Who's going to be in, who's going to be out. The weeks are going by pretty quick. So we'll just have to wait and see. Of course, this is Elliot Sadler from Saturday's race. In the Nationwide Series, his first win since joining Joe Gibbs Racing.
Track position is so, so important. So we felt like with the good qualifying effort yesterday, if we could just keep track position the whole day, we would be in good shape. And Chris made some great calls to two-tire stops and things like that to keep us up front. We fell back to 13th there at one run there at the very end because some guys did some gas-onlys, and we were really worried about making it back up to the front. And we were able to do it. I'm going to be honest with you, during that red flag, sitting in turn three, I 20 scenarios through my head of how many times I've screwed up here in the past with a good race car and not being able to finish it off, blocking the wrong lane or going at the wrong time or going in the wrong lane. So I felt like leading the race, I had to protect the bottom, felt really comfortable with David Reagan behind me because we all know what kind of draft and race car driver he is. And we're just able to make the right blocks at the right time.
And he went on to win the race, his first win for Gibbs. So, right now, let's take a look at going for next week at the Kansas Motor Speedway. And I have to make my pick. Right now, it's one of those races that Matt Kenseth won last year, but he's been having not so good a year at this time. He's had a few wins up until this point with winning 7 last year on his way to battling Jimmy Johnson for the Sprint Cup and, of course, falling a little short. Casey Kane came in 2nd, Jimmy Johnson 3rd. Martin Truex and Clint Boyer were 4th and 5th, so I'm going to rule out Martin Truex because he's driving a different car this year, and the equipment isn't the same as what he had at Michael Waltrip Racing. But so I'll have to wait and see. And with the way qualifying goes and track position, it's going to be interesting to see. It's Saturday night under the lights, so that should be interesting enough. All the night races are pretty interesting. So they're always fun to watch. And then it frees you up on your Sunday, but of course, this weekend as well, the NHRA will be back in action. We were hoping to get Alexis DeJurio on because she's in contention for the 100th female win in NHRA, and it's going to be coming down to 4 drivers with Erica Ender-Stevens, who won last time out in Houston for the 99th win, and Brittany Force, Courtney Force, and Leah Pritchett in the top fuel division. So you got 2 women in top fuel with a shot at it. 2 women in funny car that have a shot at it. And 1 in pro stock that has a shot at it. I don't think any woman in pro stock motorcycle, I think the only one out there is Angie Smith, and I don't think she is even close to it. But it all depends, because the way they line up the finals for the NHRA, it's usually the pro stock bike first, pro stock car second, funny car third, and top fuel last. And that's every week. It's nothing special for this week, but the one weekend in Vegas where they had a lot of wins, they held the pro stock off till last. So if Erica Enders doesn't get it, that leaves Alexis DeJoria and Courtney Force in funny car. Should one of them or both make it to the finals, then you're guaranteed somebody walking. And then Brittany Force and Leah Pritchett in top fuel. So we'll just have to wait and see. As far as Kansas is concerned, I guess my pick is going to be, I don't know. He's been running real well, and I think he ran there last year. I think one of the Penske Fords. I'm going to go with Bad Brad Keselowski there for my pick this week. If you want to make your picks, go to facebook.com/GarageTalkLive. Hit a like on us. If you already have, then just go to the page and make your pick there. So we'll be back next week to wrap up Kansas. I'm Vince Pontigli. You're listening to Garage Talk Live. Good night and good racing.